Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
We all get them, robocalls. What are they? How are they generated? And what can you do about them? Well, we're going to get some answers today. My guest is Bikram Bandy. He is the Federal Trade Commission's Do Not Call Program Coordinator. Bikram, welcome to Of Consuming Interest. This is a subject that I'm fascinated with because I get so many robocalls. So define a robocall for us to start with.
A robocall is a call that when you pick up the phone, you hear a recorded message. It's fairly simple.
But sometimes you don't hear a message. You just hear dead air.
Yeah, we call those abandoned calls, and there are regulations that prohibit those as well. But a robocall will have to deliver a recorded message in order to qualify as a robocall.
Okay, so the abandoned calls are probably being placed by this using the same technology, which we're going to go into in a minute, I would expect. Is there a difference in those calls?
Typically, most of the telemarketing today is done using an auto dialer, which is basically a computer program in most cases that can dial lots and lots of phone numbers for a telemarketing operation. So robocalls are almost always placed using an auto dialer, but sometimes you can have live telemarketing operations that use an auto dialer to place the calls, and then when the calls connect, in theory, the calls are then routed to a telemarketing agent who then speaks to the consumer directly without a pre-recorded message.
Okay, so you may get the dead calls or the abandoned calls because you didn't answer soon enough, thank goodness, and the telemarketer had several calls placed at the same time and they went on to the first one that was answered?
Yeah.
Is that a simple kind of simplistic explanation?
Well, with the auto dialing technology, there is a feature in it that attempts to disconnect a call if it doesn't think that the call recipient picked it up. And sometimes that technology doesn't work very well, so consumers will pick up the phone and the technology won't detect that the call has been answered, and so a consumer will hear dead air because the auto dialer will disconnect the call.
Okay.
So sometimes the auto dialer, that's why people receive abandoned calls, because the auto dialing technology isn't working properly.
Okay, we're going to go to the robocall dialing in a minute and the regulations that govern it and what the telemarketer is supposed to do. So we'll discuss that. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the Do Not Call Registry. Now, I will tell you that the minute it became available, I signed up. And it really did make a difference in the number of phone calls that came into my house. But these were the phone calls that were legitimate companies that chose to obey the do not call rules. I still got calls from rogue companies that didn't care that they were breaking the law. And I know that at one time when the registry was first established, it was set up so that consumers, you would have to renew. But then you all decided to change that. Thank you very much. And so now if you've signed up for it once, you continue to have a lifetime membership unless you change it. Is that correct?
That is correct. If you sign up for the Do Not Call Registry, your number will remain on the registry until you decide that you don't want to be on the registry anymore. Also, if you give up your phone number, and so basically if you terminate your service, if you move, eventually that number will be taken off the registry unless the number's reassigned. And then if the number's reassigned, then that consumer can then, you know, re-register that number.
I kind of have a rule of thumb, Bikram, and that is I'm on the Do Not Call Registry. Anybody who calls me that doesn't have my permission is breaking the law. I will not do business with a lawbreaker.
Well, that is excellent. That's the advice that basically we give to consumers.
Oh, I wouldn't give them anything. But I do sometimes, if it's a real person on the line, I'll sit and talk to them. They call me up and ask me about medicine. And I told them I didn't take medicine. Well, did you have surgery? They were trying to figure out if I took a blood thinner or something. I said, no, I don't take any medicine. I've never had surgery. I've never been in the hospital. Why are you calling me? Mm-hmm. They hung up. Yeah. It's mean of me. I don't care. I don't like these people breaking the law and calling me, and they're trying to rip me off for something. I know that.
But you're absolutely right. If your number is on the Do Not Call registry and you receive an unsolicited call trying to sell you something, a good or a service, that call is illegal unless it's a company that you've recently done business with,
mm-hmm.
or it's a company that you've given written permission to call you.
Yep.
And so basically, if you receive an unsolicited call trying to sell you something and you're on the Do Not Call registry, we recommend that you do not do business with that company because they're breaking the law. And most likely, if they're breaking the Do Not Call rules, they're probably breaking other laws and they're trying to scam you. So our recommendation to consumers is to do exactly what you're doing, which is if you receive a call trying to sell you something from someone that that's unsolicited, that from some company that you haven't recently done business with, don't do any business with that company, because if they're not complying with the Do Not Call registry, they're probably trying to scam you.
Yep. But there are some exceptions. Politicians can call you, of course, and charities, nonprofits. What about these companies? Now, my rule of thumb, too, is there will be some companies that will call you that are trying to raise funds for the police or the firefighters or your rescue squad. Now, we contribute to those organizations directly. But these calls that we get, I always ask them, are you a professional fundraiser? And if they say yes, I tell them, according to the Do Not Call registry, I want you to stop calling me. So I guess they can make that first call. But after I tell them, they should not call me back. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is absolutely right. The Do Not Call rules do not apply to charitable calls. Couple things to keep in mind there. One is, you're correct. If you tell a company that is placing calls on behalf of a charity to not call you again, it is against the law for that company to then call you again trying to solicit a charitable donation.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, we do see abuse where we have companies that are claiming to raise money for charities but are not actually raising money mm-hmm. for legitimate bona fide charities. And we have brought law enforcement actions against companies who are essentially defrauding consumers by getting them to contribute to things that aren't actually charities.
Well, I feel that I'm going to give directly, because many of these professional fundraising organizations take the majority of the funds for themselves and don't give a lot to the organization that they are supposedly representing. I suppose that's an easy way for an organization to raise money, but I don't like it. And I will not contribute to it. So good, we've clarified that. Now, the other complaint that I have is, at one time there was an organization, a nonprofit, I will not name them, but I felt like they were harassing me, trying to get me to give them stuff that they would pick up, and they continually call my house. I could not get them to stop. And I finally had to go to their corporate headquarters, which annoyed the heck out of me, and tell them to stop calling me. I mean, it got to the point where it's almost harassment. What do you do about cases like that? Because some charities do abuse this as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's difficult in a situation where you do ask a charity to stop calling, but they continue to call. Obviously, that's a violation of the law. You can file a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission about that.
All right.
And you know, we can certainly look into that. But beyond that,
I want to talk about filing a complaint, but we need to take a break right here to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Bikram Bandy. He is the Federal Trade Commission's Do Not Call Program Coordinator. And you're learning a lot. I'm learning a lot today. Okay, Bikram. Now, we were talking about how you place a complaint, and people can just go online and do that, right?
Yeah, I think the easiest way for consumers to file a complaint about an unwanted telemarketing call or another type of call, even a charitable call that keeps calling, is to go to donotcall.gov. That's the website that most consumers use to register their phone numbers on the Do Not Call registry. And if you go to that same website, you can file a complaint. You can also go to the Federal Trade Commission's website, ftc.gov, and file a complaint there.
Now, there's a little confusion because both the Federal Communications Commission and the Federal Trade Commission get involved in telemarketing calls. I know because I've I'm on and have been, was the founding chair of the Federal Communication Commission's Consumer Advisory Committee. And that's one of the issues they deal with. But would it be fair to say that you both develop regulations? You all are the enforcement arm?
No, the FCC also does enforcement. The way we do enforcement is a little different. But it is a little confusing, but from the consumer side, it's not that confusing at all because the laws that govern do not call and robocalls, for the most part, the FCC's regulations are very similar to ours. And in fact, there's a congressional statute that says that we're supposed to harmonize our respective regulations so that it's easier for businesses to comply with the do not call and robocall rules. And so for the most part, the rules are very similar. There are some differences, but I think for purposes of the consumer side, the differences are not that important.
It's almost seamless for the consumer in terms of where do you go to complain.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about the rules that regulate the robocalls. Now, you mentioned one of them. Companies cannot make robocalls to you unless you have given them written permission. And that was the result, I believe, of a 2012 Federal Communications Commission regulation that set up some of these parameters for robocalls. Now, I know the Federal Trade Commission had developed in 2009, and I guess this was just an enhancement. But one of the other things that they require, and this is what I find is not true of most of these calls that what I would call are from the crooks. One of the parts of that regulation is that you're supposed to be given the ability to opt out of getting these calls. Some of them do it, but they don't mean anything, and some of them don't even bother. Mm-hmm. So, again, you're dealing with crooks. They've called you in violation of the law. So I guess that's about what we can expect. Is there anything else that consumers need to know that would be I know what I wanted to mention to you, talk about. Is the using spoofed IDs so that you don't know where the call is coming from. It may have the name of your bank on it even. I mean, it could have anything, depending on the nature of the call, what they're trying to do with you. And I'm so tired of hearing from Rachel from Card Services. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, Bigram, you read about Rachel online. And actually, I think you all mentioned that in one of the programs that you're trying to start that we'll talk about in a minute. But anyway, segueing from that, what else do we need to tell consumers about these calls?
Well, I think with the robocalls, you're right that the law does require a company that's placing a robocall, assuming they're doing it legally, which in almost all cases they're not, to offer an opt-out. But our advice to consumers is to not, when you receive a robocall that's trying to sell you something, is to just hang up.
Yep. Some of them are not trying to sell you, at least not initially. They're trying to find out, like I told you, this one that wanted to find out what kind of medicines I take. Well, I'm not going to tell those people that. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm afraid some people are very vulnerable. And if they're told that I was told that this was a healthcare company that was calling me. Well, it wasn't. I could tell. It was a boiler room. You could hear it. The person spoke with a very heavy accent. Why should I believe that person, right? But, you know, people will, Bikram, because we are vulnerable. Americans are very trusting people. We should know better, shouldn't we?
Well, I mean, what those calls are about, survey calls are not regulated. So if a call is trying to conduct a survey, whether it's a political survey or any other type of survey, technically speaking, that call is not trying to sell you a good or service. So the do not call and robocall rules might not apply. But what we find is, there are companies out there that conduct these survey calls so they can sell that information to another telemarketer who can then call you. And if that's what they're doing, then that initial call is part of a plan or a campaign to sell a good or a service, and it's illegal, and meaning the rules apply to it. And so if they're calling you on the Do Not Call registry or if they're sending you a robocall, the robocall rules will apply. And we brought law enforcement action against earlier this year, we brought an action against a political company that was conducting political surveys but was attaching a free cruise offer to that survey. And so we took the position and ultimately settled with that company that they were violating the law because essentially the political calls were a conduit to ultimately sell cruise vacations.
Oh, boy. And you know what? Those problems with those cruise vacations? Bet you can't even book the cruise ship. We've had so many complaints that call for action about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, aside from that, they're breaking the law when they do these things. And we just got to remember, just say no and hang up. Well, do you know how many of these calls approximately come from outside the country? Is there any way of telling?
I don't think there's any way we can tell how many of the calls do originate from overseas. But in terms of the investigations that we've done, certainly there are a lot of calls that are originating from overseas. And that's really a result of the technology, because now the boiler rooms, the ones who are violating the law, they are using the internet to place the phone calls. And so they can do that, as I like to say, you know, it's as cheap to make a call from Indiana as it is from India. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you've seen a lot of these boiler rooms move offshore. One, two, because it's cheaper to do that, and two, it makes it harder for us to do law enforcement against an operation that's running from overseas.
Well, I do know that our government agencies coordinate with other nations in trying to deal with some of these problems, but nevertheless, I suspect that we still have a long way to go. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Bikram Bandy. He is the Federal Trade Commission's Do Not Call Program Coordinator. And again, Bikram, let me just say, I have found, while I am complaining about robocalls, I understand the difficulty in the FTC tracking down these calls. But believe me, I am very supportive of your Do Not Call registry because it does work. I mean, dinner time is a lot more pleasant around my house when the phone's not ringing.
Yeah, you know, we get a lot of complaints. A lot of consumers call me directly to say, hey, the Do Not Call registry is not working because I'm receiving illegal calls. And I do tell people that certainly there are lots of companies out there that are not following the law and are making illegal calls. But there are a lot of companies out there who comply with the law, who download the registry, and if your number's on the registry, they won't place a telemarketing call to you. And consumers aren't necessarily seeing that the registry is preventing those calls from coming through. Unfortunately, there are companies that don't comply with the law. Those people are still calling. And with technology having reduced the cost of placing lots of calls and making it easier to place lots of calls, consumers have, particularly in the last 5 years, received a lot more illegal calls because the bad guys can make a lot more calls cheaply. And they have the technology to make millions and millions of calls, which, you know, bother and frustrate, lots of Americans.
Let me ask you a question. Now, someone told me don't answer those calls. But, you know, when you look at a phone number, you may not necessarily recognize it, but you don't know who it is or where it's from. There's no really way to identify when you go to look at your phone if you have caller ID. There's no way to identify if it's a robocall. Is there? Or am I missing something?
There isn't, and that makes it difficult. A lot of consumers do use caller ID to screen calls. Obviously, it's easy for calls that you know the person's phone number. It's easy to screen that way. But obviously, not everyone that calls you is somebody that whose phone number you would recognize. And so, screening, is not a foolproof way of preventing receipt of any robocalls. And the other thing that you mentioned earlier is that caller ID spoofing is rampant among these companies that are placing illegal calls. It is extremely easy for any caller to make any 10 digits they want appear on the caller ID of the person who's receiving the phone call. That making it more difficult to spoof caller ID is a big challenge because of the way that caller ID functions in the phone networks. We have been working with carriers, engineers, and other people that have expertise to see if we can make some improvements to caller ID so that it's harder to spoof, or at least so that consumers will have better information indicating whether the caller ID that they're seeing has been spoofed. But that is a work in progress, and it will take time and effort and regulation most likely to get that done. But it is a problem we're acutely aware of, and we continue to try to do work to see if we can make caller ID function better, because we know that many consumers do use caller ID as a way of verifying identity of the person that's calling, and with spoofing being as rampant as it is, that's a very risky proposition.
Right, exactly. Well, now you all are we only have a couple of minutes, but you all are you've started some campaigns or contests to try to get techies, our technical gurus, to come up with programs that would apply technology to screening these calls. And I know that this has just been recent, this past year, that you all have started doing that you have launched these campaigns. What is the time frame for them, and what are you looking at? I mean, are you offering, something like $25,000 award for winning ideas?
Sure. We've actually been doing contests since 2012. And we had so much success with our first contest in 2012, which basically tried to develop what I like to call the spam filter for the phone, basically a technology that could identify numbers that are potentially illegal calls and block those calls from getting through, or make it harder for those calls to get through to consumers. And we've analogized this problem to email spam, because law enforcement is difficult with operations being overseas and being with spoofing making it difficult to identify the callers, and even one boiler room can make millions of calls a month easily. And so what we've realized is that this is kind of like the email spam problem, which was a huge problem a decade ago, where people were getting lots and lots of spam email, and people were legitimately concerned that email would no longer be viable, because for every legitimate message you'd receive, you'd have 100 emails from Nigerian princes offering you, seeking your assistance to get money out of the country.
So it's funny you should mention that, Bikram. My husband just got a fax from a woman in some foreign country telling him that she had all this money and she wanted to share it with him.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, right.
It's an oldie but goodie.
The faxes are still used, even.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's a very old school scam if they're using a fax machine. But basically we said, well, what happened with email is email spam filters, that technology came into being, and spam filters do a pretty good job of filtering out a lot of the spam messages that people used to get a decade ago. And so basically, a couple of years ago, we sat down and said, well, can we do the same thing with the phone? And in 2012, we held a contest to basically see, can you create a technology that will block potentially illegal calls? And the answer was yes. And we had three winners from our 2012 contest. And one of them is actually up on the market now with a product that's available to consumers that have voice over internet phones that can provide that kind of blocking service. And so what we've done in the follow-up contest to that is seeing if we can make that technology better. The way the technology works now is it plugs into our complaint data and other sorts of complaint data to identify numbers that are likely illegal calls. But it takes time for consumers to complain about numbers so that a number essentially gets on the blacklist. And so the idea is, can you create algorithms that can identify potentially illegal calls faster than the current consumer complaint?
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap up. I've only got a minute left. Bikram, so what people should do in order to assist you all is to complain. Send you all the phone numbers that are being used in these scams so that you all can add it to your database and it can become part of the algorithm that you develop to identify. So would that be it in a nutshell?
Absolutely. Consumer complaints are very important. They're used by the call blocking platforms, and we also use them to identify targets for law enforcement. So without consumer complaints, it makes my job harder. And so we welcome consumer complaints. It's a really important part of coming up with a solution to the problem.
Bikram, thank you so much. It's been a very informative and interesting interview. I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us today. My guest has been Bikram Bandy. He is the Federal Trade Commission's Do Not Call Program Coordinator. I encourage everyone to use it. It does work. And if you've got a complaint about a call, go to donotcall.gov and register your complaint by all means, because it will help the Federal Trade Commission in fighting these scams. I'm Shirley Rooker. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500. My email, shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.